welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty to welcome in Learning Curriculum Director from Embracing Our Differences, Mr. Ben Jewell Plocker. Ben, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Wow, we're really stoked to have you here. So I know that you've got a lot going on contemporary with Embracing Our Differences, about to get the big yearly exhibit out, but I kind of want to start back a little bit where your line starts, because I know you dedicated your whole life to this sort of thing.
Yeah, you know, and I don't think it was the goal initially. When I was in high school, I loved singing. I loved performing. I said, I want to be a performer when I grow up.
Nice.
I even at one point in undergrad dropped my music education major because I don't want to spend that much time with kids. And then, you know, life takes you where you need to be. So I started slowly but surely working for organizations that were youth-based, that were education-based, that were community-based, and I realized how much I love it, how much I like being, you know, for lack of a better word, behind stage, you know, backstage, helping make things happen, and that my skill sets really worked for there. So, you know, it all works out.
You do have a pretty extensive music education, yeah?
Yeah. So I have a bachelor's and a master's in vocal performance.
Dang.
You know, there's only so many people perform on stage, right? So,
right.
You know, it's kind of one of those funny things where you look around and you're like, not all of us are actually going to do this for a living. But all the skills gained through that have been so valuable. I feel like I'm having a performance degree, I feel like I'm a really good critical thinker and problem solver, because you're always having to, on the spot, make decisions in a live theater situation. Also just thinking creatively, because especially my two degrees were classical music-based, so a lot of singing in foreign languages. So you really have to be interpretive and think, how am I going to convey this message to people who I barely know what I'm saying. Most of this is an English-speaking audience. You know, I have to convey that message to them.
Right.
So I do like to assure my parents that it was all money worth spent. It's all come in handy. But, I mean, yeah, I if you had asked me 20 years ago, I would have said, oh, I'm going to be performing and traveling the world. And I've lived now in Sarasota for 12 years now, I guess, almost 13. So
did you start the music education straight out of high school? This was the path you were on?
Yeah. So I went to undergrad, and I was going to get a dual degree in performance, music, vocal performance and music education within the first semester. I was like, no, I'm just going to drop that music education piece. And I got to the end of that degree and I found myself like, I don't know what I want to do with my life yet. And I thankfully had a really great mentor, voice teachers. I think they really should call them voice teachers and counselors.
Yeah,
because it's such a personal thing. Like your music, your art is such a personal thing, especially when you're making it with your body.
True.
Everything can feel really personal. And he said, well, why don't you just come work? He was executive director of a children's choir at that point. He's like, why don't you just come work for the children's choir for a year, see where things lead. So I started that work. Started to kind of feel that itch. If I don't go to grad school, if I don't continue to try to pursue performance still, I'm just never going to do it. So I need to do it now. I'm going to go to grad school. Ended up moving from Indianapolis to Dallas, Texas to get my master's. And by the time I got to the end of that, I knew I wasn't the best singer in the room by any means. I knew I was not the best at singing and interpreting in foreign languages, which is really important.
That's a tall order.
Yeah. If you're going to be a classical singer, you're going to have to sing in foreign languages, especially if you're going to go into opera. But that I did really enjoy working with young people. I really enjoyed keeping the trains moving on the same track, keeping people organized. So at that point, I ended up, this was 2009, so a great time to look for a job.
Right.
Those of you, you young people out there, it was not a good time, the Great Recession. So I ended up at Interlochen Center for the Arts in Michigan as a residence hall director. And that just kind of kept building my feeling of, I really like working with young people. They're dynamic. They're not set.
Right.
There's room for them to continue to become something else. And I can play a part in that. And I probably won't get to see what my part was but I can play a part in that, hopefully in some way. And then in the summers, I had the great opportunity. I'm from St. Louis, and there's a I think it's now 100 years old. There's a outdoor amphitheater. It's called the Municipal Theater. It's called the Muni for short. It seats 10,000 people, and they do 7 to 8 Broadway musicals every summer with performers from New York and, you know, professional union performers. And so I became an intern there during the summers when I wasn't working at Interlochen, and I was an assistant stage manager backstage. So getting all these different experiences, I'm still kind of getting my backstage artistic experience while also getting to work with young artists. It was an arts boarding school. Interlochen is an arts boarding school. And then this opportunity in Sarasota came up where I got to take those two things and combine them when I moved down to Florida to work at Sarasota Opera initially.
So how much did your education play into getting those early gigs, even though it wasn't exactly, I mean, obviously you weren't singing.
Right.
But it couldn't have been all for naught.
No, it wasn't. I mean, I'm positive that it was a big plus for Interlochen to employ individuals who are going to be working closely with students who understood what paths they were going on, how hard that was going to be, what drive it was going to take, what emotions were going to be involved in that. It definitely helped me understand the students better. And even if they didn't believe me all the time, understand kind of where, what was going to be next in their life if they decided to pursue that route and continue to study their art form. Definitely my work sometimes it can seem like, okay, the people backstage, they're just moving the scenery, turning off and on the lights, the artistry involved in all that, and just the understanding of what's being able to understand what's going on stage, because you have to seamlessly fit into that and support it so that it can happen, is so important. And Sarasota Opera has this fantastic one-of-a-kind program where they allow young people to put on full-scale operas. So my knowledge of how to put together a production and work with young people on a one-to-one basis, it was this wonderful marriage of all these things that I loved at the same time. Yeah.
So you got some ancillary unexpected skills from your schooling that put you good strong out of the gate. And then this led you to Sarasota. What was the opportunity that initially brought you here?
So it was working in the education department at Sarasota Opera, coordinating their after-school youth chorus performance program. So, when we first started, my colleague and I, who's still there, we both started at the same time, the music director. I think we had about 40 young people that kind of held on from, music programs are so, unique because it really does start to kind of be part of who's leading it. And so when people transition, there's a natural transition, the people who participate in programs. So we had about 40 young people at that point. I think by the time I left, we were between 90 to 100. On average. So, and I never expected to move to Florida. That was never on the dream board. That was never part of any grand plan. I didn't know Florida outside of Orlando, probably like most Midwesterners.
Right, exactly, same.
Yeah. So moving here was kind of just it was such a big change on so many ways. Farther from family in St. Louis, different climate, got rid of all that. And also living in a smaller community that was very arts focused.
Right.
Yeah.
And this is Sarasota circa?
This is Sarasota circa 2011.
Okay.
I was living downtown on a coordinator salary in 2011. Imagine such things.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it was a very different time. In the summers, there was nobody here.
Right.
Yeah. So a very different place, but just so arts infused in kind of everything and a pride in it too. Which I think is still present, but we definitely have a lot of new faces. And so, kind of finding, is that still who we are? Anyway, I mean, that's...
Did you know that this was going to be an area where you would be able to put your music knowledge and your education knowledge to use, or did you kind of just leap in the net appeared with this one?
I mean, I came upon the opportunity here in Sarasota on the internet, Googling job boards. And I could tell from the description, because they wanted someone who was both going to be able to manage after-school youth programming, but also look and say, okay, we have a $300,000 budget for this production and we need, you know, and I was like, oh, I understand these things. Cause I've gotten it, you know, and, a liberal arts education is really helpful.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it can sometimes be, you know, it can sometimes be overlooked or, you know, for lack of a better, woo. But I learned how to view things through different lenses and make sure that I was listening and doing my best to appreciate other experiences. You know, I look back on my undergrad and some of the great courses I got to take that were part of my school's curriculum, a class called Change in Tradition, where we read books by authors across the world, to my cultural geography class, where we studied the continent of Africa based on the cultural geography, not the lines that were drawn during colonization.
Interesting.
A course I got to take on, you know, post-colonial America and Native populations and what happened in that. So all of that comes into play because I was able to not only look at the art that I was involved in that I was doing and try and make sure I was really putting myself into the shoes of others, but also making sure, especially when working with young people, that I was trying to put myself into their shoes as well.
Right.
Because they were spending 6-8 hours with us a week. Well, that's very fraction of time.
Right.
Being able to really say, okay, I know you're not angry with me right now. Let's come back to this place because I want to make sure you're okay and help, you know. So it was critical. The education opened so many doors. I think it also opened doors to new places, you know. I would have never found myself in Florida had I not garnered all the different experiences in education I had.
Right.
But so much of my college experiences with discovering who I was after living in a Midwestern town where I was not out as a gay man in high school. So, I mean, that was critical that I start to really figure out who I was when I went to college because I didn't really do that when I was in high school.
And I know that arts programs can really help young people do that.
Yeah.
So being that, and I came from a relatively small town as well, being that those are the kinds of places where it's harder to get into arts education or exposed to those things at an earlier time, how important do you find it to be for the youth to be able to be exposed to art and the limitless of creativity sooner than later?
Oh, so, you know, and beyond just them developing who they are as people, but you look at what CEOs and Fortune 500 companies, what do we want in our, we want them to be creative. We want them to be problem solvers. And the arts are a wonderful place to do that. You know, in high school, I was so lucky to go to a public high school that had great arts programs. And I got to not only be in the marching band, I got to be in chorus at the same time.
Nice.
Because they valued it enough that they had schedules set up that you could do two electives like that throughout your 4 years and you could graduate and it would be perfect. It would all work out, you know? And so, you know, I got to march in the marching band. I got to march in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade.
Awesome.
You know, I got to do all these things that were really team building, right?
Yeah.
Plus problem solving. I got to sing in the choir, be in the musical. And I was super lucky that the town I grew up in is a suburb of St. Louis, that my parents also really valued giving us experiences that they didn't have. So they as kids didn't go to live theater productions with their parents, but they were like, this isn't something we got to do as kids, but it's pretty cool. Well, we should take our kids to this. So when
right.
I was a kid, they had season tickets to a local repertory theater.
Oh, cool.
And they would take us sometimes they take us and realize maybe this wasn't a show we wanted to take them to, but they were willing to let us experience things that they hadn't gotten to experience as kids. You know, so they were stretching themselves, but they were also saying, well, I'm going to take my kid along for the ride because they should, I want them to experience these things too. I don't think I'd be where I am today if they hadn't been willing to let us see things that were out because they grew up in a very small, I could have ended up living on a dairy farm. My father was this close to taking over a dairy farm right before my mom and him got married. And they probably would have lived in that smaller Southern Illinois community for the rest of their lives. And they might have just, that might have been their lives. And that would have just been my life. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
I got to learn so much more about what lied outside those boundaries.
Yeah, it's more how pivotal exposing kids to art early on can be. And I know a lot of programs, and this is something I definitely want to talk to you about, mm-hmm. a lot of programs in schools are drying up. Everybody knows that. They have been for a while. And it doesn't matter if I interview a barber or someone who's played bagpipes or whatever it is, if they say my junior high actually had a bagpipe corps that I got in, and that's why I'm here. And my yeah. friend who's a barber said, you know, we actually had cosmetology class in high school, and that helped me get the jump. So I think it's important for people to realize how significant those things can be, even though it might not seem that way at the time, you know?
It's a captive audience.
Right.
It's a captive audience, and it has such an influence on, yes, obviously, it has such an influence on you. And, I think it's interesting you said dried up. I mean, it unfortunately is still a case that when money becomes short, you're looking towards things that aren't seen as core, even
exactly.
though the arts is core to who we are as a people. I mean, it's how we communicate our stories across generations. It's how we communicate a lot with one another. But it's not always seen as a core part of education. And then also because the arts are messy. The arts are where you're going to explore different ideas and concepts, and you're
True.
Going to think outside of the box, that sometimes it cannot be so much the drying up as the limiting of scope of what can be experienced through an arts curriculum.
Yeah, and talk to me a little bit how that has changed over the last—I mean, I know that's changed a lot recently.
Yeah, you know, and that's state to state, that's county to county, that's...
Okay, so that's...
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, because we've reached, I believe, personally, we've reached a point in education in this country where we were moving forward to the idea of being critical thinkers, and then we got scared, because if we can critically think... That means we can potentially come up with ideas that maybe other generations before us didn't have, or come to understand, even if we don't agree with viewpoints that are beyond those of our immediate communities.
Very good point.
And that's scary. Change is scary. Admitting that what you thought you knew was true could be different, and there could be another perspective is very scary. So. I feel as a, not a classroom educator in the state of Florida, but someone who works with educators and who tries to support educators that unfortunately has been a misunderstanding and a distrust in what happens within schools and classrooms.
Hmm.
And it's something that's so beautiful, and there's a misconception that there's nefariousness that's occurred in that sphere. And you don't dedicate your life to a career that will never pay you enough money to live in any state of luxury.
It's in music and education. You went where the twofer.
Right, exactly. Like, you're not going to become an artist because, you know, you're not, these two things are not going to lead, there's such a small percentage that's going to lead to
right.
economic bliss. You don't do it because of the money. These people are dedicated to what they do. And that's sad because it not only limits students who may not know about, might not have those lived experiences, but then it limits the students who do live in that lived experience. The arts
True.
Have the ability to provide windows and mirrors where we can see ourselves and we can see others. And so that's very difficult, I think, these days.
Do you find that the arts being, I hate to say it, but to me and to you, such an obvious bed of where critical thinking is born, is that the avenue you have to take in to try to make the legitimacy for this now? Because otherwise it's just seen as woo?
Right, yeah. You know what? And so it is a constant, I think it's a battle for the artist to convey the importance in a more bullet-pointed, measured, numerical fashion why it's important, because we just know why, we can feel from every core of our being why it's important, because it, we just know. Explaining that to someone who's not accustomed to seeing the arts as a core experience can be difficult. And it is. I mean, I have degrees in performance. It's led me into other paths. And I wouldn't be in these paths if it hadn't been for that experience. And there is numerical, calculable reasoning behind why those experiences have helped me be successful in life.
Right.
But we're not very good at explaining it. You know, we're just not. Sometimes, you know, artists, we're not always good at even asking for money. So, you know, I think it is imperative because, you know, one of the great things and the things that drew me to the work that Embracing Our Differences does is every year this international art and quotation experience is brought to our community. And the goal is not to tell people what to think or how to think. It's to provide windows and mirrors for us all to have discussions around. So if we're looking at critically thinking, and I'm thinking about the work I get to do with Embracing Our Differences, at no point do I walk into the exhibit and point at a piece and say, this is what you should think about this. I say,
crucial.
I ask you, the visitor, well, what do you think's going on in this picture? And then we have a conversation, which I don't tell you you're right, you're wrong, because first of all, I learn a lot every time. And I also am going to see a new viewpoint. And if we're a whole group of people and I'm facilitating a conversation, we're going to see lots of viewpoints. So that provides me with the ability to critically think and creatively think, and also watch people as they critically and creatively think about the different viewpoints that they're coming up with and ideas that they're bringing to the forefront by experiencing, viewing, being part of an art experience.
Right. So talk to me a little bit about this exhibit. You do something like 50 pieces annually, yeah?
Yeah. So this'll coming up, 2024, it's going to be, so the 2024 is our 21st annual exhibit. The exhibit features 50 artworks and 50 quotations that are selected from entries that come in through around the world. We received over 16,000 entries this year.
Good God.
From over 125 countries.
That's awesome.
45 of the 50 states. And it's both youth and adults. There's over 450 youth entry, 450 schools around the world who submitted works. But when you go to the park, you'll see artwork by a kindergarten student, by an octogenarian, by a professional artist, by an amateur artist, by a professional writer, by an amateur writer, a kindergartner. And the really fun thing, our theme's the same every year, Embracing Our Differences. That's mm-hmm. the theme that we ask people to create these artwork and quotations around, is that the artwork is submitted through one competition and the quotations through another.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask.
Yeah, they don't see each other's works. And they're reviewed and selected by community judges and panels separately. And then we get down to like a final 50 artworks and more like 60 or 70 quotes. We start to see how they might match up.
Interesting.
And you have these common ideas that are being thought of in sometimes a more literal stance, you know, via words, but then also through art, which is more subjective. And they match up like these two people must have met each other on the street and had a conversation.
That's so cool.
It is. And across the world, too. You have an artwork from a student in Brazil, and there's this quote from an adult in the United Kingdom, and they look like they had always been together.
The universality of that.
The universality of, yeah, how we view that idea of embracing one another's differences, yeah.
That's a very interesting way to go about it. So 21 years is a long time.
Yeah.
So tell me how the perception of this exhibit has changed over that time, because I know societally, for want of a better term, people's perceptions of these sort of things shifts in general, and
yeah.
We've had some good shifts lately. So what kind of reactions have you gotten over time?
You know, and I think the whole idea of uniqueness, embracing differences, inclusion, kindness, and respect, it continues to evolve. Mm-hmm. It's not a straight line. It's not without curves, you know.
What do you think attributes to that? Because inclusion is a word in the dictionary with a definition.
You know, words, take on different meaning, right? They have power.
Right.
And that power can be multifaceted.
Very true.
You know, so when I hear the word inclusion, I feel a feeling of warmth.
Yeah.
I feel a feeling of being seen. But I've also spoken with individuals when they see that word, they think that they're going to be excluded.
Interesting.
That it means that something's going to be put upon them that they didn't ask for, nor did they want.
Hmm.
So, you know what? The artwork changes every year in the exhibit, first of all, because the theme doesn't change, but obviously the world continues to turn on its axis. And the artwork continues to change and reflect that world. I think, you know, when this first started in 2004, it was a collaboration. It was actually because of the Holocaust Museum in St. Pete.
Oh.
The Florida Holocaust Museum brought an exhibit from Europe, from the Museum on the Seam located in Jerusalem, called Coexistence.
Okay.
And that came to Florida via the Holocaust Museum and was shown here in Sarasota, St. Pete, and Boca Raton. And then a local group, the local organizers here said, we really love this and we want to do it every year. So then that's how Embracing Our Differences was born. They formed their own organization and started curating their own exhibit every year. And that's grown into what we have today here in Sarasota. And that was a group composed of people from across the political spectrum, across lines of belief or non-belief, people of all community, you know, people across our community representing all skin pigments.
Love and, that.
And so that, I mean, really, it was born out of people, and I think sometimes it's perceived that it's really, this is just something that is on the left, but we very strongly hold and believe and stay true that we're not a political organization.
And well, there's differences on every side.
Correct. And everything that one individual believes doesn't mean... We are in this salad. I had a group of students once and we were talking about melting pot. And they're like, no, we're a salad. Because in a melting pot, you congeal and become...
Homogenized.
No, we're a salad. We retain our uniqueness while we're mixed together.
Interesting way to look at it.
Yeah, right? So in this we're all in this salad bowl together. This is the only salad bowl we have. At least for the foreseeable future, there's no rocket trips being sold yet
to foreign
planets. So how are we going to make it work? Because we're all here and we all deserve to be treated with dignity.
Amen to that.
And respect. And there's nothing wrong. We will lose nothing by being willing to accept someone for who they are. Now, there's certain times when we can't accept someone for who they are. Racism is an instance where we have to stand up and say, I can't accept this from you. But we can do it with love. We can do it with a feeling I want you to be part of our community, but I can't accept this behavior because it makes others scared. It makes others worried. It makes others feel like they need to always find a place where they'll be safe and can hide in case something goes poorly. So we can't always accept every...
Yeah, right.
When hate is part of accepting that person, that we have to accept the hate that they give.
And do you find... This may be somewhat of a stupid question, though I'm not a
firm
believer
in stupid questions.
But do you find that a lot of people's hate or reticence with some of this stuff is just based in fear, and the embracing our differences is literally the only thing you can do to combat that?
Yes. Yeah. We fear what we don't know. Our brains are a magnificent and scary place.
Facts.
My brain won't let me go over the Skyway Bridge without, you know... It's a scary... My brain has constructed this reality for myself, right? That's not based in truth. It's going to be fine. People do it every day.
Yeah,
it's
right.
All working out. but a fear, you know, the knee-jerk reaction when we're confronted with something that is unexpected, not part of our faith, but our faith, our understanding of the world, our beliefs, and wanting to shut it out immediately instead of because it might stick to us, I think, is sometimes, instead of learning. And maybe some things will stick to us, but you still have a choice.
You're right.
You still have a choice. Embracing one another's differences is not a contagion. It's not a contagion. You still have the choice whether to accept others, whether to take on certain beliefs, take on certain ways of being as an individual. You still always have the choice. But how wonderful is it if you can at least embrace the idea that others are different, and maybe you might learn something really extraordinary.
That's the ticket right there.
Yeah.
So as someone who's involved with the education and the curriculum to help young people do this, how is it how is it that you try to teach people open-mindedness and be able to rely on that when those fear instincts kick up and you want to shut people off? You want to say, keep the others away from me. I'm safe here.
Yeah, I'm safe here. This is what I know. One of the ways we do that is through a wonderful set of questions that was developed around a practice called visual thinking strategies, which was developed at the Museum of Modern Art in New York initially. And now there's an organization that shepherds visual thinking strategies on, trains people in it. And the practice is one where we don't set any lines on what's right or wrong when we're looking at artwork, when we're looking at images. We leave everything conditional with the realization that art is subjective. It can be many things to many people. So this has led embracing our differences to a place that really is embedded in all the ways we work with individuals, where we do a lot more listening and facilitating without providing any conditions or conditional language within those conversations, so that everyone has a voice at the table and no one's right, no one's wrong. We can all learn something from each other. So this involves, so what this looks like when we're in the exhibit, for example, is me facilitating a conversation amongst a group of visitors by simply asking them what's going on in this picture, hearing their responses. Sometimes asking them, oh, well, what do you see that makes you say there's an old man with their grandchild? Having them break down and provide more reasons why they think that's what's going on in the image. Continuing to ask people what more they can find. At no point saying, that's an old man, that's a young girl. Saying, oh, so you're noticing some details that remind you of an older individual, potentially male, and a younger individual, potentially female, based on the clothing or such things.
Ah.
So we really strive to create space for conversation by creating the ground rules, the parameters, the framework, so that we can all function within that. We all know what we're doing. We know that this is how we're going to approach it, and this approach is going to be one that's respectful, that values the fact that we can have a different idea and it's okay because there's no wrong. And so this whole idea that's embedded in visual thinking strategies is how we look at the work we do across our learning programs.
So is this just kind of a way to teach people how to navigate the nature of seeing something subjectively and then sharing that?
Yeah. I mean, I know personally it leads me to stop and think and process much more before I react as an individual, because I'm stopping and thinking, well, what do I see? Oh, what might be another idea here? As opposed to jumping right to that conclusion, also seeking more ideas like from other people. So personally, I feel like it kind of becomes a way of being where you, instead of making things unconditional, I see X, therefore Y,
right,
into I see X, maybe it's Y, maybe it's C, maybe it's C. It could be so many different things. So now I'm open to the possibilities of what an individual I come in contact with, or a situation, or a landscape, or a you know?
So it's more just about providing people the opportunity to think in a different way.
Yeah. How can we stop reacting and start? How can we stop reacting and start interacting with one another? I just came up with that.
That's a good one.
That just flew out of my mouth right now. Trademark.
Yeah.
Because we react. And sometimes we don't have a lot of time in our digital age to think. We are forced into reacting very quickly. There's no 30-second time clock that starts when you like a post somewhere to be like, do you really like this post?
You got 30 seconds.
You have 30 seconds to reconsider your answer. I mean, you can undo it, right?
Yeah.
But nobody gives you a moment to be like, did you really mean that selection?
Yeah.
Did you read the article or did you just read the headline? Giving your space time to stop and think. And also forgive, for lack of a better term, forgiveness. When you hear another idea that you're like, you're shocked by or you're taken aback or maybe feel some hurt from, to realize that I'm listening. I'm going to learn something with this. Maybe I'll better understand why that is their framework and point of view. Because even if I don't understand, I hope I reach a level of respect.
Well, that's where the understanding has to start from.
Yeah, then I'm going to respect that. Yes, this is a view, and it's okay. We might not come together. Yeah, and it doesn't mean we're on opposite sides of a win-lose game, too.
Yeah, so many things are presented as a zero sum at this point. And one thing I wanted to say, you know, when we were talking before about the education, so much of the core education is a zero sum. You know science or you don't know science. You know math or you don't know math. Where art can provide you an entirely unendingly subjective realm that can offer you the opportunities to think like that. And that's what I'm really curious, how you implement that or how you try to get people thinking that way when, like you said, we are so locked into a react. You know?
Yeah. Well, and you hit the nail on the head. Education is built for a large part in the United States over you either know something or you don't, and we're going to test you on that individually.
Right.
So you must know that. And if you don't know it, then when we look at that, the visual thinking strategies framework, it's based in an area of proximal development. So I can do this with a little help from other people. So it does pull us out of the framework of knowing a specific fact or being able to recite something into, we're going to do something together, and none of us has all the bits and pieces we need to be successful, but as a group, we can do this together. We can have this conversation. So a lot of, you know, outside of taking a trip to our exhibit, you know, about 10 to 15,000 students experience that in some way every year, whether it's in person or virtually online, to reading programs that we do in our local schools. We just had our fall bucket fillers reading day. We distributed about 10,000 books in Manatee and Sarasota County.
Very cool.
Yeah. And books are books are filled with illustrations, right? So once again, we have our prose and we have our visuals, and we've been working really hard with our volunteers to stop and smell the roses, use the pictures in the book to let the students think about what they think the story is about, what they're seeing, because there's so much in there. So I guess, you know, one of the other things, so how do we do this? How are we getting people, how do we help individuals stop from making the snap to being open to the possibilities, open to other ideas, is providing space, whether that's providing an exhibit in a public park that's accessible anytime you want it, with anyone you want, maybe some people you didn't even know that you just kind of like met in the process, to a reading day where you are reading a shared text with your classmates and reading along with that with a community volunteer who you've never met probably before, or maybe it's just that person that comes into your classroom, you know, twice a year through this program, and you have space to do those conversations, to, you know, our Unity Day program that was actually developed by a Sarasota County school counselor, Jennifer Maney, many years ago when she retired. She's like, I don't want this to just end. I want this to continue.
Right.
And that's a program where we provide space for a group of 60 to 70 high schoolers to spend a whole school day learning about one another. And in the end, really learning through that space that they've been given that no one is perfect. Everyone is up against some challenge, whether you can see it or you can't. And wow, if we could just be really open with one another about our challenges, about who we are, and not be fearful that that will lead to the snap judgment.
Right.
What a school community we could have, because we could support one another, or at least know that we belong when we walk in that door. So a lot of what Embracing Our Differences tries to do is create space for individuals to stop and really just be able to think about these things and maybe realize there's some other perspectives they hadn't considered before. And maybe they find those more true than the ones they thought they held.
Right. And you know, it seems like they kind of took all the equipment out of the gym to work that part of your brain. So it's really cool that you guys do that.
You really have to keep the hotel empty.
You do. You have to.
In order.
Because you never know who's going to show up.
You never know who's going to show up.
And what you could learn.
Yeah. See, we've circled back. You didn't even pay me to do that. It just happened.
So in 21 years of these exhibits, a lot has changed socially. A lot has changed educationally.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that you see that you kind of wish were still the same? And what are some of the changes that you think are kind of for the better?
You know, when I look in the landscape of education, now this is a personal opinion.
right, yeah.
I think we've tipped the scale on testing. To a certain extent, we do a lot of testing with students nowadays. Now, it's very helpful because it gets us to the place where we know where people are, but it also, because of the nature of testing, that it's a one student to one test ratio in many times, it means that we're not harnessing group work and really
Good
encouraging
point.
That. And that's something that I think as a society, as a country, this isn't just Florida, we've continued to place a lot of chips in that basket of testing students. We've eaten up the time to have experiential learning.
Right.
The field trip is not on death's door, but it's a much more complicated endeavor than it was when we were kids. The time, the space to do those things with students. So I wish we could dial that back a little. I think the testing is very helpful. but we may have gone a little too far into that because, again, we're not providing space to look at how do we think as a group.
Right.
And in the end,
we are supposed to be greater than the sum of our parts at some point.
And at the end of the day, most of our thinking is a group process. You know, I can't drive down I-75 and at least consider the thought processes of my fellow drivers.
This is true.
This is important. You know, some things that I think are great to keep, you know, the pandemic was a great opportunity as arts organizations, providers, creators to really sit down and explore digital opportunities. And we didn't have to before because we were very happy with our in-person audiences, patrons, in-person experiences.
I suppose, yeah.
But we had to if we wanted to continue to really explore the digital. So I think there was a lot of great things that came out of that. I know Embracing Our Differences, there are ways that we are engaged digitally. For example, doing live virtual field trips from our exhibit for school groups outside the state of Florida, maybe somewhere on a different continent in the world. That's never something we would have considered doing before COVID. But
that's amazing,
suddenly
though.
We were there, right? And
yeah.
It's like, well, we have the power, we have the technology. Why aren't we doing it? And so that's become part of our process. That's become part of how we interact. You know, to the ability that we all love, hate Zoom.
Right.
we have the ability to really interact with people in meetings in a way that we couldn't when it was just remember the conference call, the voice conference call? You're always waiting for somebody like, should I talk?
And we're all looking at the thing in the middle of the table.
Yeah, like everyone stares. Yeah. Yes, everyone stares at the speaker.
Yeah.
Like it micro eyes.
Yeah.
You know, we're not getting any of the visual.
Right.
Where we express so much of how we're actually feeling about something.
Mm-hmm.
So it's provided us with an opportunity to connect with people more authentically, I think. A definite silver lining that's come out of something that, you know, changed our world. I mean, there is a before and an after.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and pretty much everybody we've spoken with, it doesn't matter if they're inventors or musicians or whatever, it's always the BCAC.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can't. You just can't. I mean, it even if you didn't feel like it was as big a deal.
Right.
It changed you in some way. Because other people thought it was a big deal, so it definitely changed your life.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it just did.
So I know you said before that when you have the submissions for the art exhibit, mm-hmm. they come from many different countries.
Yeah.
Did you have an international reach with Embracing Our Differences before COVID, or was that something that COVID helped?
We did. And that's thanks to the other thing that really, you know, took civilization and turned it on its head and sped us up. The dawn of the internet
right.
changed everything. When Embracing Our Differences did its first call for submissions.
We'll let that one go.
So when we did our first call for submissions as our own entity in 2005, it was all local, and it was, you know, hard copy entries of artworks. Now, since the internet age and everything with a handful of local school submissions that teachers bring us directly, everything is digital. I think we did expand our reach in some ways during COVID from a standpoint of we were all looking for digital access to things. So
people
who had never experienced what we did found us because they were just spending more time online. Things that have come through the COVID timeline around social justice, and so I think social justice or movements which I think are meant to allow people to be people, be themselves in Florida that have led to legislation, have also brought more eyes on us because in a landscape where there are concerns in Tallahassee, in government that students are being indoctrinated or that there's viewpoints out there that aren't okay for students, Embracing Our Differences, unfortunately, or is one of those places where people are putting their eyes to see what we're up to.
Right. You know, because you're one of the few people on the other end of that stick.
Yeah. You know, and it's so weird because I think we would look at ourselves as a staff, as volunteers, as people who support the organization. Like we didn't see ourselves as, we saw ourselves as a middle point that
right.
was here to bring voices together. So it is always interesting to know and understand how you are perceived by
yeah,
others.
Yeah, how does the irony seem when, you know, you're literally trying to expand people's horizons of thoughts, but then you get seen by certain people as being divisive and narrowing thought?
Yeah, you know, I'll have to admit that I take it way too personally sometimes.
Well, I imagine it would be hard not to if it's something you care about.
Yeah, yeah. And I think to a certain extent, it's central to my ability to exist as an individual because of my sexuality. You know, if I can't help us all find at least respect, how can I look to a young gay person say, don't worry, it gets better.
Right.
Because I fear that it's not getting better right now. So there is a personal drive to hopefully leave this world in a better place than the one I've encountered or found. Yeah, but I mean, yeah, to be like, no, literally, we just want to have everybody have a chance to talk.
Yeah.
We're not trying to tell you how to think. We're not trying to say that this is a right way and this is a wrong way.
How difficult do you find it to try to make that point or even try to describe that point to people who are so used to binary thinking? Because there's such a narrow inroad and sometimes no inroad. Because that sentiment you just described sounds foreign. I'm not trying to tell you what to think, just to think.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. I think you have to, if you're not, that's the first step. If you encounter an individual and they've made clear that this isn't a conversation.
Right.
This is me versus you, or I'm not looking to have a conversation with you. I'm looking to bring you around to my point of view. Well, those are that would be the sign of, oh wait, so we're not having a conversation. We're having a lecture at one another, maybe by a certain point.
We're not doing that part where we stop and look at the painting and think, what does this mean? I'm just telling you what I see.
Yeah, yeah, and in which case we're not gonna. We're shut off from input at that point. That happens to me too. We're shut off from input. Yeah. So that I think sometimes, as a facilitator, as someone who you know is working to have groups of individuals interact with the artwork and quote, you know, that's something I try to look for if we're having, you know, because also our goal is not to make people uncomfortable. Now, new ideas are for...
It's kind of more to be comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yeah, let's be uncomfortable being uncomfortable with the realization that this isn't Squid Game. We're
in that salad bowl together.
We're in the salad bowl together. And so if we recognize that in a conversation where it's like, no, I'm not going to keep pushing you. That's not going to lead us towards a place of kindness and respect. It's going to lead a place to where you're much angrier at me than when we started.
Right.
Because we're not in the same place. We're not flowing. Or vice versa, maybe. Maybe it's coming at me and I'm like, I am not flowing. Yeah. No!
I can't hear right now.
I cannot hear right now. So we're not going to have a conversation. So we're not going to create any good out of that situation. We got to step back and we have to recognize where we are. You know, there's certain thoughts and philosophies like, where are you at a certain moment? Are you thinking with your head, your heart, with your feet? Okay, you're running away. Where are you? And if you can recognize that and also try and recognize in other people, then you can hopefully be in a place where you're not pushing someone someplace they're not, they don't want to go.
Right, because that's counterproductive to you being understood anyways.
Exactly. And that's, we won't gain anything good out of that. Maybe we'll just exit the situation, you know, null sum. That's okay too. At least we didn't.
We can come back together at a different painting.
Yeah, at least we didn't tip the scale, you know, some more that day in a direction that's leading us farther away from one another.
Well, I know you got the exhibit coming up. Tell me how this will run, and that's going to help kind of get these conversations going.
Yeah, so the exhibit will go up in Sarasota on January 21st, and it'll be in Sarasota's Bayfront Park through April 14th. So a nice long span this year. Also, for the first time since the exhibit came from Jerusalem, that original exhibit came from Jerusalem to Florida, will be for the month of March in St. Petersburg in Poynter Park, which is located kind of amidst the USF St. Pete campus. So the whole exhibit will actually be in two locations at once when we get to that month of March. We have the ability for school groups to come on free field trips to the exhibit. That's one of the wonderful things about embracing our differences since the beginning. We recognize the cost associated with school busing, and so we cover all those costs.
Oh, that's awesome. Groups.
Yeah, so it's a free experience. In addition to offering for non-school groups, for those of all ages, public tours of the exhibit, plus just the ability, again, public parks, the ability to come anytime in however you are, come as you are, and experience the exhibit with or not with whoever you want to. So we'll be back in those two locations this year. The exhibit's already selected and can be looked at online as well, so you can view it from the comfort of your home and check out what's going on. Also, the great thing with our online galleries, which go back all 20 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So you can look at literally everything that's ever been in the exhibitions.
Oh, we'll definitely make sure we got a link to that in the description.
Depending on the year, it kind of like stopped, and then it's picked back. We've started up again. We get video statements from the artist. So you can literally see a video of that living artist talking about this piece that they made and what they were hoping you might see in it. Now, I always tell people, just because that's what they wanted you to, that's what they were hoping you would see, doesn't mean that whatever you see is wrong or right.
Right.
It's all,
you know, artists, choose your own adventure.
It's a choose your own adventure. So you just get to hear what the artist thought. Was hoping you might gain from it, but what you gain from it is what you gain from it.
That's very cool. That kind of open-ended thing is really awesome. I love that. I'm so happy that you're doing that. Your organization does that. We need more of that.
Thank you.
So I'll get you out of here on something kind of easy. It's not a job interview. Where are you in 5 years? But what do you see the next big steps being? What are some of the things on the horizon for embracing our differences beyond the exhibit that you're excited to see unfold?
You know, I'm excited. We are excited for this return to St. Petersburg. It's St. Pete has a very vibrant visual arts community, and we feel humbled by the visual artists, museums, and individuals within that community that we're getting the opportunity to show them these pieces from around the world. I think we're really hopeful that will be, continue to be something that happens annually in both locations.
Very cool.
You know, so we can continue to share these messages of inclusion and kindness and respect in an even wider area. I think we also hope as an organization that we continue to move towards a place of kindness and respect. You know, if I was to hope, what's on the horizon for our community, that we don't lose sight of that. Because this is such a Sarasota, Manatee County. I mean, the Suncoast region, or the Culture Coast, I think is now what we're saying.
Right. That's, I haven't heard that one yet. That's a good one.
The Culture Coast, I think, is a new Visit Sarasota.
That's clever.
The Culture Coast, that we recognize we are the Culture Coast because we bring together lots of different people.
That's truth.
To have these amazing arts experiences that would not be possible if we painted in a set palette, or we only performed a set number of pieces, or we only conveyed our art in a specific way. We're able to do this because we are a community that is rich in diverse individuals, which means from many places with many viewpoints. This includes everyone. So I hope we don't lose sight of that, because that's what's made us what we are.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say that's one of our biggest strengths around here.
Yeah. And if we, and it can make us even more, we can really continue to amp that up. So I hope we don't lose sight of that.
Amen to that. Well, Ben, I appreciate your time. I had a blast talking to you. Maybe we get to do this again sometime.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, thank you so much,
my
friend. Thank you.
Thank you.